Welcome to this edition of the Disciples Men podcast with your hosts Greg Alexander and Alex Ruth. Thank you for joining us as we explore the many challenges of being man of faith in these challenging times. Disciples Men is a ministry of Disciples Home Missions of the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in the U.S. and Canada. Let's listen in today's conversation.
Welcome to another edition of the Disciples Men podcast. This is Alex Ruth. I'm the Associate Director of Disciples Men and joined, as always, by our Director of Disciples Men, Greg Alexander. Greg, good to talk with you today.
You too, Alex. Always great to be on the podcast with you. I hope you're doing well.
I am. I hope you're doing well as well.
We are. We're all good. Ready to be set free from the COVID virus and its restrictions. But we're good. Thank you.
Yeah. I think we all are in that same boat. We prefer this thing to be done, but in it for the long haul, I guess. We'll stay doing what we need to do as long as we need to do it.
Absolutely. We got to protect people as best we can until an answer is found.
Exactly. So we've talked about a lot of things, and we talked ahead of our recording today about what we would discuss, and I'm really excited about the topic before us today, and that is, why is men's ministry important? Which I think is a great topic and an important one for us to talk about here in 2020 and years that follow. Why is it important to have a ministry focused on and dedicated to men?
Well, I'm looking forward to your answer to that question, Alex.
I thought because I asked it, you would start with the answer.
Oh, okay. Well, let's give it a shot. Well, I suppose that there are a number of ways that one could respond to that question. And so for me, it's probably best for us to stay within our wheelhouse with what we've been doing and in how we've designed the Jesus Way Ministries. Part of the work that I've done and that you've done, in putting all this together has been focusing on some of the historic roles that men have played in American culture, Western culture. And I think it's fair to say that we've also come to learn that some of the stuff we inherited, the understanding of the cultural worldview that we inherited, that scale was tilted in the favor of white men.
Yes.
And, and as we've talked before, that's called patriarchy, where, the power, the decision-making power, the financial power in the United States is controlled by primarily white men. That has been under attack, rightfully so, for a long, long time. It hasn't died. It's still very much enforced. I think, without being partisan, it's fair to say that the political realm we're in today certainly reinforces one side reinforces the notion of patriarchy, and the other is doing its best to call out patriarchy and its challenges and deficiencies that make it really suspect for the time in which we live, if it ever was important. And so, when you talk about gender-based ministry like ours focused on men and try to justify its existence, well, part of it is that because, if you're over 45 or 50 in our culture, your primary worldview was formed by patriarchy. And that may even be a lower age group. I'm not sure. So don't hold me on that one. But still, there's a significant number of men and men in our churches for whom patriarchy formed their identity as a man in America.
Yes.
So if you're going to begin to dismantle patriarchy in order to claim a more egalitarian worldview where, as we remember some of the catchwords of Disciples General Assemblies, where all means all, where we really take seriously that there is equality among all of us, that we welcome, women and men and people of color into all the leadership capacities of the church for those who have the skill sets to provide leadership. You know, it's no longer based on the fact of the color of your skin or your gender as to who's qualified for leadership positions. As we continue to try to evolve as a denomination into a much more representative group of leadership, and how we express our faith in the world today, men have to come together and begin to dismantle patriarchy together in their own way. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to work if someone just points fingers at you and tell you you're wrong and tells you to change. You know, right. Our instinct will be to push back and resist that with all our effort. But if you get men together asking the right sets of questions and giving them the right set of lenses in order to begin to see themselves and the world around them, they will come to their own decisions around the negative impact of patriarchy. They will begin to recognize that some behaviors are no longer appropriate and never were, and that they begin to see that those behaviors also are impacting negatively, you know, their spouses, their kids, their significant others, people in their workplaces. Is that those attitudes, those priorities that they set, the value system that they live by, is having dramatically negative impact on the people they claim to love.
Right.
And so part of the reason why a gender-based study like this is that men have got some things they got to work through on their own. Right. They have to be fed, you know, with information that comes from other sources. You know, again, this is not us figuring out without the help of women and people of color.
Right.
Because we do need those voices. And we're working on that. You know, we shared that before. But at the same time, there are questions that men can ask each other that can't be asked by anyone else. There are conversations that men would be intimidated or embarrassed to have with anyone other than themselves. And so part of what we're doing is creating an opportunity for men to have this kind of honest self-evaluation in the group of other trusted men that is biblically based, you know, that has direction as we, you know, follow the pathway Jesus set before us, that is grounded in love and grace and understanding, and I think ultimately encouragement. And now they help each other and support each other in trying to make the kinds of required changes mm-hmm. that they acknowledge must be made in their faith lives and in their lives in general.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that there's this, maybe it's just me, but I think that it goes beyond me. There's this image of men getting together that is that cigar smoke filled brandy snifter, you know, drinking kind of back room where women are, were not allowed. And that is not, emphatically not, what we're talking about here. This is not to be the ministry, the Jesus Way materials are not meant, not designed to be exclusive of someone who is either a woman or gender nonconforming, non-binary, anywhere on that spectrum of gender. The material works for us all. It is specifically targeted at some of the aspects of masculinity which have been problematic, as you talked about through the years, patriarchy, white supremacy, and the list goes on.
Yeah. And it's, and again, I've learned over the years that they're just, you know, when a woman comes into a room of men,
yeah,
the dynamic changes, everything shifts.
Yeah.
And you can't have, well, I won't say you can't, that's too strong a language, but it's extremely difficult to have the soul-searching conversation that's required when, you know, when a woman comes in to a room of men who are trying to have these conversations. Because all of a sudden, you know, you get into, you know, chest puffing out, you know, I'm better than you kind of contest stuff that always happens when women are around, is that we go into that kind of goofy mindset of men.
Right.
You know, make people think that we're, you know, something other than we're not.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why that is a thing for us, but it tends to be. And maybe That's one of those things that I think we're experiencing might be in the midst of changing. We might be seeing our younger generations have less impact in that matter. As I talk with folks who are, 10, 15, 20 years younger than I am, that image of what has been has started to shift. And I don't know what's caused that yet. I haven't read any real good research that has illuminated why that might be, but it does seem that there is almost more equality and more equality in the younger generations as we look towards millennials and beyond.
That's true, and I think there are a couple simple explanations, and I'm sure there are a lot more complicated ones. But just, kind of a simple response to that is, especially me, because I'm older, I grew up in a time in which there were two worlds. I grew up in a time which, patriarchy and racism was the norm.
Right.
And, in my, late teens and early 20s, I was a part of helping, with the civil rights and the Vietnam protests to begin to change that understanding. And so, it's been a part of me for many, many years. Well, my kids grew up with a more finished product of Greg as dad.
Right.
Than I did. Yeah. And so some of the prejudices that I inherited, we had already debunked.
Right.
For our kids. And I know that's true for many. And again, that's yes. just not universal. We still see, young militants who were, wearing, Nazi symbols on their arms and, part of white supremacy groups or whatever, they're there. But by and large, we have, I think the majority of the younger generations are people for whom the biases and the prejudices that once ruled in my generation, we did a pretty good job of, again, debunking and dismantling those for these, the millennials and these other younger generations. They don't have built in those prejudices like we had to try to overcome. And so there's a real natural affinity for everybody.
Yes.
And that's, I do think that that's a huge part of the cultural shift that we've seen. Again, we haven't arrived at any place yet, but we have made some big strides.
Yeah. And arriving isn't really the goal. Right. As we talk about in Jesus' way, this is not, the Jesus destination. This is a process. This is an ongoing becoming.
It's a journey.
Yeah, it's the journey. It's that metaphor is deeply ingrained in who we are as people, I believe, and certainly as followers of Jesus. And I think another thing that goes into the increase in inequality that we see is younger generations. I was kind of at the very beginning cusp of internet when I was in college, and it has certainly grown by leaps and bounds since. So folks who are younger than me in my mid-40s have had greater exposure to different people. I can get onto YouTube and I can see someone from just about every country in the world and interact maybe with them or at least hear their stories. That wasn't as available to you and I when we were growing up.
It wasn't available at all to me.
Yeah. But if we weren't if there wasn't somebody who was different than us in our town or in our circle, we weren't likely to run into them, so that has helped even in areas. I live in a very rural community here in Missouri, and there are still folks in the high school and certainly folks my age who've never really left the state, let some of them even this kind of quadrant of the state, to be exposed to people who are different than them. And when there's no exposure, there can't really be any understanding of what makes us all unique.
That's correct. And that is one of the beautiful things about, you know, about the world in which we live in, and the great side of the technology that's available. Nora and I were talking this morning about how we watch our kids, and our kids are in their, you know, in the early mid 40s now, and our grandkids, who are just now getting their own older, our oldest grandkids are just getting their own cell phones. How, and I've watched this with young pastors for a long, long time, is how they have adapted the use of their cell phone in ways that I could never do. I mean, they know how to use it, incorporate the tool that it is for them, that I could just never embrace. Number one, I can't see it that well. And number two, my fingers aren't quite that agile as they once were, plus they're big and clunky. And, but I don't have the mindset. I don't have the frame of reference for how that tool feeds who I am and answers the questions that I have. Now I use it. I'm not a total nerd with it. I do a lot of things. I can do searches and stuff, but it's not intuitive.
Right.
And so, you know, things like TikTok or is that the right thing?
Yeah.
That they're talking about now, and WeChat and all that kind of, I don't do those things. They're not part of my frame of reference. I'm not even sure why people want to do those things. That's my old fogyism. That's not a judgment statement. But what it does do is it opens up their world.
Right.
I mean, their world is so far more expanded than mine because of those opportunities and how they learn to incorporate these technologies into just a daily information flow of their life. Goes back to what you were talking about, is that the technology and, you know, just the times that we're in have given people a chance to see not who, you know, when I was growing up, the government and the old and the people around me, the peoples of authority, told me what I would think about people who were other than me.
Right.
They gave me the script. And today there isn't a single authority that's available to give any kind of script to these younger generations. They can find whatever information they want at any given time. And so they're free to write their own narrative and to create their own lens with which to see the world. Again, that was not a luxury that I had growing up. I mean, my worldview was restricted to a 9-inch black and white television in a box about as big as a car.
Right, right.
I mean, that's how it worked. Yeah. And, you know, and so what we learned came through the three or four channels that we could get on that little TV.
Yep.
And so now with the technology that's available, there are obviously people who are trying to control some narratives, especially in the political realm. But the truth is, these folks are so adept at getting around all that kind of stuff, you know, that they are getting the information they want to create their worldview.
Right.
And in one sense, that's really an awesome thing if it's used correctly. Now, it can be a bad thing if it's not,
Well, there always needs to be some kind of a boundary, right?
Yes, there does.
Which is something else we talk about in the Jesus way, is having those co-journers that are walking along with us, but they are the wise elder. Who may not understand the technology. And I'm with you on TikTok. It's just not a thing that I do. But I don't understand it. But when I have questions, I've been around long enough that I know I can talk to my kids or talk to a youth in the church or another youth that I happen to know in the community. I've got the outlet to find out those things. So we also, what I'm getting at is the bi-directional or multi-directional learning that can happen in a group where you have an elder who's got some life experience. It can maybe help a younger person or someone who is younger in the journey navigate some of the same stumbling blocks that they've walked over and around and tripped on. And at the same time, the elder can learn from the younger from an expansive worldview that we didn't have the benefit of growing up.
Yeah, well stated. Well stated. And you know, it's even though those opportunities are there for us, I mean, they are. We could embrace that technology too.
Yeah.
You know, for me at my stage in life, there's no real advantage to that.
Right.
But at the same time, I cannot get in the way of how it resources, you know, my grandkids and my kids and grandkids. But there also needs to be someone who has lived enough life that they can say, you might want to rethink that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not telling you what to do, but you might want to think about it in these terms as you start going off in that direction and at least factor them in as you're making your decisions. That's always been the role of the elder, you know, whether it's defined by church or just in society as the older, wiser person. And it's also one of the things that we hope is a part of our Jesus Way groups for men, is that it's a blend of older and younger men, where the younger men help the older men see the world as it is, and the older men can help the young men see that it's not always everything you think it is or is cracked up to be, that there are some filters and things that you need to employ. And you know, that makes for a wonderful dialogue. Everybody grows. Everybody is better because of those conversations. And again, it's not old men telling young men how to behave or that their tats are stupid.
Right.
Or that's not what it's about. It's about learning to see the world through each other's eyes and finding the giftedness that comes when we can truly listen and see the world as another sees it. And not only just the men in the church, but I think, again, that's what the technology does, is it allows us to see the world through the eyes of, you know, a young Ethiopian someone living in Russia or wherever. I mean, you know, it gives us an opportunity to see the world through so many other people's eyes.
Yeah.
And hopefully it keeps our worldview expanded and not shrunk down to a world of one, which tends to be the direction some are wanting to go today.
Well, it's fairly natural. You know, I only have my own experiences with which to look at the world. You know, who I am today is the sum total of what I've experienced up until this point. And so I only look at the world through my own eyes, really. I can train my eyes to think about what it might be to be someone else, but I interact with the world through my own skin, with that buffer or that lens primarily. And so it's difficult to extract ourselves from that lens and put in a different viewpoint. I've been blessed for years to be a part of a ministry that offers weekly prayers for world news. And what that has done is it's forced me to be in contact at least with what's happening around the world. Not just in Marshfield, not just in Missouri, not just in the United States, not just in North America, but dealing with what's happening on all the continents, on our oceans, a much more global perspective. I found that on one hand challenging, because you have to look at things from a different perspective. And this team is blessed to have writers from around the globe. So it's often interesting to hear that different perspective. You know, I realize regularly how situated I am in my own skin, in my own life, that those other writers will help me break that mold and look at the world differently. European mindset is different than American mindset. Australian mindset's different than both. It's primarily where we've got writers right now. But thinking about things in a more global capacity is something that is, it's very important. It can be challenging, but it's very important.
And that gets at one of the core elements of really what the Jesus Way is all about. You know, I grew up in a time when modernity was the sociological framework. And in modernity, your handed certain absolutes that you trust are non-negotiable and are truly absolutes. And then things come along like civil rights, Vietnam War, equal rights for women, environmental rights. You know, there's a whole series of those things, you know, that begin to let you know that what you thought was absolute isn't absolute. And, you know, while we're in a time of postmodern or post-postmodern, you know, social worldview, whatever it is now, in which you are required to choose what the absolutes will be for you in your life. Mm-hmm. Now, in one sense, that's really a scary proposition.
Yes.
Because, you know, where do you anchor? You know, what are you tethered to that gives you that sense of security in life if there isn't any agreed upon absolutes, you know, in, you know, that your culture or the world can claim? And so it does require each of us to do our homework. It requires each of us to, you know, to do, I would say, heartfelt, prayerful discernment.
Yes.
About what really is, in some sense, non-negotiable for who I am and the world in which we live. There aren't things now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the problem. There aren't things. As you and I have given our life to serving God.
Right.
But God is not an absolute in our world. It may be for each of us.
Right, right.
But God is not an absolute in the world. And right. So God is a construct that has been, and has multiple different ways of being constructed to meet both genuine and selfish need. Yeah. And so part of the work that we're asking men to do through the Jesus way is to number one, do some self-assessment. This is who I am. This is where I came from. This is what influences me. This is how that gets translated into the world around me. Is that the person God wants me to be? And that sets us off on a journey.
Yes.
Because then we move into the study of, you know, the Bible component, which is who is God? How did all this stuff come to be? How do we take it seriously? How do we read it? What's its impact? What's its meaning? How right. authoritative is it? All that kind of stuff becomes a part of the equation. And so working together with a group of men is that we start to sort through these things. And of course, we're sorting through these things as world citizens.
Right.
And all that stuff has to come into play. And so, you know, we talk it through, and the more diversity you have within the conversation, the richer the conversation, the better it is. Because now I have more information at my disposal to start making the kinds of choices that I will give some absolutism to in my life. For me, God is a non-negotiable. Jesus Christ is a non-negotiable. But that's only for Greg.
Right.
And that, you know, the how I see that. And even you and I, who come from different places, who worship the same God and the same Lord, even you and I, when we sit down and talk about it, we have differences of how we see this.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it doesn't make one right or wrong. It just is, they're different. And the joy of our journey is that we've learned from each other.
Yes.
We're both better because we've known each other and worked yep. together in this ministry. And that's what we're hoping to achieve with the Jesus way, is that we're wanting to give people the equipment that they need, some tools that they need to begin to say, for my life, for where I am, and who I am, and with the people I'm around, with the challenges that I face, etc., what become the non-negotiables around which I can stake my claim, that I can build my life? And of course, because this is a Christian enterprise that we're working with, is that everyone who participates, we would hope would claim that that's God revealed through Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
And that's the journey. And so again, we're not telling you how to believe. We're telling you that you ought to believe, not you have to, but that you ought to believe.
Yeah.
And that here are some tools to help you decide what it is you want to believe about God and how God revealed God's self through Jesus Christ yeah. in the company of the men making the journey with you. And recognizing that the decision you make is going to impact spouse and kids and job
right.
and world and you know, if you conclude that that climate change is a hoax, you're going to have significant impact upon a whole lot of people,
right?
By how you choose to live your life.
But part of the reason for the group, and I think this is part of the reason why church in general is important, is others serve as the white lines on my road. They let me know when I'm getting ready to run off in a ditch. If I'm good doing this all by myself, if I'm the only one on the road, and I know I'm the only one on the road, it doesn't matter where I drive. I don't even have to stay on the road. I can get wherever I'm going any number of ways. But the company of other people in the realm of disciples men, certainly the company of other men, helps us stay on the path. It sets up some boundaries for us, keeping us, to use the biblical phrase, on the straight and narrow, or the narrow and rough road, not the wide and easily traveled place.
I think that's a great image, is that, people are the lines on the road for us. And, what I hear getting missed today is in the discourse taking place around us in these really challenging times, is that no one can tell me what to do.
Yeah.
No one can tell me what to believe. And, there is some truth to that. But in practice, it stops at the moment it begins to infringe upon my own freedom to, right, to make my choices and live my life, which puts us in a position of negotiation. Yes. Now we have to begin to negotiate how that serves both of us, or how does that serve all of us? Mm-hmm. And when you have political leaders who refuse to play by the rules, who refuse to drive between the lines, and have people who are applauding the fact that you're such an independent thinker, you're such a free spirit, what gets lost is the fact that all of a sudden there's a whole lot of people who's getting run over.
Right.
Whose lives are being irreversibly damaged because you refuse to acknowledge that you must fit your life in with everyone else's life to, yes, a common end. And that's not a statement of faith. It is a practice of how we practice faith, but it's not a statement of faith. That's a statement of human decency.
Right.
That's a statement of what it means to be a part of the human community. And yes, as soon as we wake up to that, the world might have a fighting chance if it's not too late. Yeah. But as long as we see each other as competitors for limited resources, well, there's no end to the damage that we're going to do to prove our point. And that's, yeah, what we're seeing taking place around us. And, yeah, if you don't care, if you really don't care what the aftermath is, God help us.
Yeah.
God help us all.
I agree. And at the same time, I'm heartened by, the voices that I'm hearing these days that are calling us prophetically, calling us to return, to not necessarily return to an old way, but to return our focus where it should have been all along, and that is on God and on one another. To humble ourselves, to not consider, our self-worth as somehow our divinity resides in our sense of self, but that it actually exists in an other, or in the others around us. So I'm heartened that there are some voices that maybe have not been heard for a long time, may have been suppressed for hundreds of, if not thousands of years, that we're beginning to hear those voices, and the suppression is lessening in many ways. And it gives me hope. I told somebody recently, I have to have hope in because if I don't have hope, I need to give up what I'm doing. I need to go sell cars or something. If I don't have hope, then it's not worth. Not worth it.
No. And, you know, the Christian Church Disciples of Christ in the United States and Canada is a marvelous witness to, what you just discussed. When you look across the leadership of our church, and I'm very privileged because of my journey to know all of these, almost all of these people quite well, is that we have a cadre of people who don't look like you and me.
Yes.
Who are in leadership capacities, who are doing phenomenal work, who bring such a depth of spirit, such a strong faithfulness, an extraordinary love for all, courage, you know, a matchless courage to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ for and on behalf of our church and the whole church. And I am so proud of who we are and how we have provided opportunity for, in some sense, what I would say for the cream to rise at the top.
Yes.
In that it's not just white cream or white male cream as it has been in the past, but this is the marvelous diversity of our church on full display.
Yes.
With I mean, and it's just absolutely beautiful. It's powerful. It's rich. It's wonderful. And I just wish our people could understand and embrace who we are and what we're becoming as a denomination. It's been hard work, hard work to get here. And, you know, we've had Terry Horde Owens, our general minister and president, on our podcast. And Terry's just phenomenal. I mean, she is a phenomenal leader. And Sheila Spencer, who was our current interim president for Disciples Home Missions, was on here. Again, another phenomenal person, just a great leader for us at this time. Tim James, you know, Reverend Dr. Timothy James, who's the general secretary of the National Convocation. I've known Tim for a lot of years. I mean, the man is just a brilliant person. I wish I had, you know, in my whole body, you know, what the kind of depth of faith and understanding he has in his little finger. I mean, I mean that with all my heart. The guy's just that wonderful. And, you know, the list goes on and on. And Paul Che, who is the current head of Christian Unity Group. I'm sorry, I'm having a brain cramp moment for the disciples, but he's our ecumenical officer for disciples. I've known Paul for years. Again, I don't know of anybody more brilliant than Paul, and he's just absolutely perfect leader for that work for us and represents us so beautifully. And, you know, this is who we disciples should be claiming who we are.
Yes.
This is the future. This is not only a future, this is who we are in the present, have a chance to be part of the transformative work of God in the world if we come together and embrace the leadership capacity that we're exhibiting within the life of the church. I mean, I can't stress that enough. I've been so blessed to get to know these people, and I'm glad I'm not in the way anymore.
Yeah.
I really am. I mean that with all my heart. You know, I was an old white guy taking up a seat I shouldn't be sitting in anymore.
Right.
And you know that there are people who have much greater capacity than I ever had to do that work. I'm grateful for the opportunity to continue to do, you know, ministry with you and Disciples Men. But there's going to come a point in time where I'm taking somebody's seat that I don't have a right to.
Right.
And and I trust that God will let me know when that moment comes.
And I think part of that is, you know, again, the beauty of the group, the beauty of getting together with a bunch of other guys is we develop a relationship with one another that supports us in that, where we have other folks, hopefully at the table, we develop deep enough relationships that somebody can ask us the hard questions. Say, are you really doing what you think you ought to be doing right now? Is this where God is calling you at this moment? It's a hard question, but it's a vital question and one that we need other people around us to ask.
It is. And that's, again, that's our whole journey.
Yeah.
It's helping answer that question.
Yes.
And we use Jesus as the example of how life lived with that kind of faith can look like, but it will be unique for all of us. There's no model. Yes. I mean, there's no one way. There's many ways as there are people making the journey, and that too has to be celebrated. But it's, you know, as we started, the question was, why men's ministry? Why is it important to do men's ministry? I hope we got close to answering that question. It is so important that men come together and take care of our business, you know, that we need to take care of, because it's our situation we've helped create. And so we've got to be the solution in that way. And again, there will be all kinds of other voices feeding the conversation. It has to. We designed it that way.
Yes.
All kinds of other conversations feeding, or information feeding this. So that gives us, we hope, the breadth and depth that we need to make really good choices about how we're going to live our lives going forward, and how we can begin to be the change agent and the difference makers in the worlds in which we live, in our own realms of influence.
Yeah.
And that's why we do it. Again, you and I aren't doing this because we're making a living doing it. We're doing it because we have a heart for this kind of transformative work among men. And, you know, we'll go until we can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Until we're told, we're told we can't do it anymore. Or till someone says it's no longer relevant.
Right.
That could happen too.
Yeah.
It could always happen.
It could.
But it is about understanding we're not dealing with universal absolutes we all salute. Is that we're on a journey to discover what the absolutes are for us in cooperation with and in partnership with the people around us.
Yeah.
And that's how we will define life for us, and how it will impact the life of the people within our realms of influence. And I'm just grateful that we have a chance to be part of this journey.
Yeah, it is an amazing journey. And who knows if we actually answered the question, but I think we've at least hit on several topics that I know are near and dear to our hearts, and all centered around the fact that men's ministry, I believe, still is an important part, has an important place in the church, as does ministry to and with women, as does ministry to and with children, and multi-generational ministries, and any kind of ministry that you can think of. They have a place because they draw us together with folks who are like us and challenge us to become more than we already are.
Amen. I want just two postscripts before we sign off. One is a plea. We all know and are aware how the coronavirus and its impact upon church life is also dramatically impacting the financial life and health of our churches.
Yes.
I'm not a part of that. I'm not in one of those places where I'm pleading for support. My little church does just fine. I am aware of many of my colleagues, our colleagues out there, for whom life is very tenuous as ministers of the gospel, that their churches are really struggling. And so, hear this plea. Take the time, if you can afford it, to write another check as much as you can, or use your credit card, or however you make your tithes and offerings, to help support your church through this time, because your church will always be there to support you through your challenging times.
Right.
And you know that. You know that. I don't care what your relationship is with your pastor. If push comes to shove, if you have a need, your pastor will be the first one knocking on your door or calling you to find out what they can do.
Right.
As will the other people in the church. So please, this isn't a time to pull back. This is a time to be bold and aggressive in your support for the church. So please write a check for your church. Write a check for your region. Write a check to, you know, Disciples Mission Fund, so that the whole church can benefit from that, because we're all in this together, friends.
Yes.
And if our witness has any value, we've got to demonstrate that now. And so that's one. The second one is that you and I are going to be privileged to interview one of the great saints of men's ministry coming up Our next interview will be with Nathan Higginbotham. Nathan has been the director of men's ministry. I'm not sure that's his exact title, but that's what he does for our largest region, the Southwest region of the Disciples. They have had historically the largest men's retreat activities, some of the largest projects. They've done an enormous amount of work on the United States-Mexican border and building homes, and refuge places of refuge for people. They've done extraordinary ministry through the through other partnership ministries. I've known Nathan for a long time. He's one of my dearest friends. He's one of the most beautiful people I've ever had the privilege to know.
Yes.
And he has done such extraordinary work with the folks in the Southwest region. He is sort of like the granddad of Disciples Men's Ministry right now, whether he would wear that title or not. That's who he is. And Nathan has agreed to come on and spend some time with us. And I can't wait. I just honestly can't wait till we have that time with him. He's such a humble man and has done such extraordinary work over the years. And he's done it all for free.
Yeah.
He's done it all for free. And so this is really one of the great saints of our church. And so again, stay tuned. Upcoming in a few weeks, we'll be having that conversation with one of the great guys, Nathan.
Yeah. The granddad model works. I think he took me under his wing first time I met him. Was so gracious and pleasant, and you could just tell a deep man of God. Does remind me a little bit of a grandfather. He's probably not quite old enough to be my granddad, but Nathan is a phenomenal human being, like you said, and looking forward to that conversation very much. So
great. Same here.
Thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it, as always.
Thank you, Alex. Always great to have this time with you.
Our special thanks to our good friend, the Reverend Dr. Dean Phelps, for providing the special music of this podcast. You can discover more of Dean's music at deanphelpsmusic.com. And you can learn more about the ministry of Disciples Men on Facebook and through discipleshomemissions.org.